You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of A Collected Works, Volume 93 by Rudolf Steiner. 20 lectures entitled The Temple Legend, translated by John M. Wood. This is Lecture 17 in the second lecture in Part 3, but Lecture 17 in the book, entitled Freemasonry and Human Evolution, Part 1, and it's a lecture for men only, given in Berlin on the 23rd of October, 1905, at 10 o'clock a.m., and the lecture for women is given at 11:30. That's the next one after this. I have asked you to attend a short discussion on occult questions, because one must acknowledge that anyone participating in the theosophical movement should be clear not only about the outward things that are dealt with in the program, but also about the direction in which this theosophical movement can lead. Now, those occult streams that are living in the theosophical movement are in fact akin, in a particular respect, to earlier occult currents. The topic we mean to broach today concerns precisely one of these, which still persists to the present day, Freemasonry. You know that at least until the late 17th century, any kind of female member was, for Freemasonry, strictly taboo. At that time, there was a good reason for this. When the reason for the Freemasons, having no female members, ceases to exist at some point in world evolution, then the time will have come for the work of Freemasonry on the physical plane to be taken over by the work of Theosophy. Pro tem, the work of Theosophy is preparatory work. Men and women will participate in the Theosophical work on the same basis. If I were now to be permitted to say briefly why women had to be excluded from the activities of Freemasonry, I could only say that one does not exactly give away one's secrets to the opponent. One hardly sends him one's plan of campaign. That is not done in the conduct of any war. And we will see that Freemasonry is, in a particular respect, in opposition to the female world. Freemasonry is the continuation of very ancient secret societies and brotherhoods. Such secret societies, at least in the form in which they survive, in Freemasonry, originated just at the very beginning of our fourth post-Atlantean epoch, that is to say, in the same epoch in which Christianity later began. You know that the outward compilation of the Bible is rightly ascribed to only a few hundred years before the birth of Christ. But the biblical revelation was a living tradition for thousands of years before that. It was not the custom in antiquity to write such things down. They were instead passed on from mouth to mouth. Therefore, it can be assumed that the secrets which Moses entrusted to the priesthood were only later written down. Now, in the same period as that when the Bible first made its appearance in world history as a document, what is known as the Freemasonry legend also came to be compiled and to be circulated. In world evolution, it is always to be regarded as a law that what happened earlier is later briefly recapitulated. Every human being recapitulates in the maternal womb the stages through which the human race has already passed. Every planetary stage of the earth repeats in its initial stages the previously completed steps of its evolution. What has already gone before is always briefly recapitulated. So is it with the races too. Hence the first, second, and third post-Atlantean races, epochs, are the recapitulation of earlier earthly conditions, only in a specific higher realm. What began with Lemuria developed throughout Atlantis and was recapitulated in our three cultural epochs in a specific higher realm. So that we thus have a recapitulation of what occurred earlier in Lemurian times in a less developed realm. Before the system of two sexes originated, there was a kind of bisexuality, a single combined sex, insofar as in each individual both sexes were represented. For the separation into two sexes only came later. Only then did male-female become male and female. On a spiritual level, something similar is recapitulated in our epoch. Actually, that kind of knowledge and wisdom which pertained in pre-Vedic ancient India had a male-female quality, and thereby at the same time something quite unconnected with any kind of duality or with any kind of outward principle. Then came the civilization of the second cultural epoch. This was preeminently a spiritual culture having two sexes. Dualism then appeared, Ormuzd and Ahriman, good and evil. All this now merged with man's cognition. Now we want to clarify how that came about. It came about thus. In the beginning, before there was a separate male and female sex, there was a twofold sexuality within each single individual. We must now ask, what was it that could become fertilized, and what was it that did the fertilizing in the one single individual? In ancient Greek mythology, Zeus is portrayed with ample female breasts. A truth is expressed therein, which was known in the old mysteries, and which we also learn from the records, that the sex, if I may call it that, that immediately preceded our own outwardly and physically, resembled not the male but the female gender. So that before the outward separation, we have thus both sexes in one individual that outwardly, in physical expression and in all perceptions and being, was female. Therefore, at the beginning of the human race, we have to do with a bisexual individual tending toward the female. Only later did the male sex follow. Now we must be clear that in this individual, which had both sexes in it, a fertilizing agent, or male seed, was also present. Woman contained man within her. When we have grasped the fact that the woman had the male principle within her, then we can conceive, with our ordinary scientific concepts, that reproduction was ensured. We want to bear in mind that at that time this happened via the woman. Now came the time when things had to go their separate ways. What character did the fertilizing principle in the woman then have, which on the physical plane would fertilize the female nature? What worked in the female body as a seed was the male, and that was what was spiritual, the wisdom. Woman contributed the substance. The spirit gave it form. Any structuring on the physical plane is a realization of wisdom. Wisdom worked in the female. Now the two differentiated themselves, in that the two things which had previously worked as one now appeared as two separate poles. What was previously united in a single human organ became separated, whereby a duality in human development originated. This duality came about thus. First, the fertility, the ability of the female egg to fertilize itself, within the one individual, ceased to function. The female egg lost the possibility of becoming fertilized from its own body. So we are now dealing with a female which has become infertile, and above everything, the spiritual. The division of the two sexes came about through the separation of the physical organs, and the other sex was now endowed with the possibility of fertilization. Two individuals appeared, one with physical femininity and the other with physical masculinity. With the man, wisdom has a female character. With the woman, it has a male character. The separation is a very definite event that one can follow. We will now have to be satisfied, however, with mere indications. We are dealing, then, with male-tinged wisdom in the woman and female-tinged wisdom in the man. This female-tinged wisdom is passive, suited to receiving, listening, watching, to taking in from the surroundings. The male-tinged wisdom, the active wisdom, is productive. Thus we have a twofold wisdom. There is the female wisdom that is active, and that, naturally, will also be transferred to the men. Thus there may indeed be plenty of men to take over the female wisdom. The race is propagated below on the physical plane, and above we are dealing with an active intuition stemming from women and with a passive cognition decidedly male in character. This figures in the old mystery teachings as the antithesis between the sons of Abel, or sons of God, and the sons of Cain, or sons of man. Abel represents the female, active intuition. Therefore, he is unable to take hold of anything from the outside world, which needs to be worked upon. He takes up the divine, which streams through him, which flows into his intuitiveness. The, in quotes, herdsman symbolizes that. He tends and nurtures life, while intuition nurtures the divine life of wisdom. Cain has the male wisdom that receives the outward. This wisdom espouses the earth in order to till it. The material is outside himself. He is the field builder, (bracket) literal meaning of German der Ackerbauer, agriculturalist, close bracket. What does the wisdom of Cain now achieve? This science of Cain, that being a passive science, only receives. What does it accomplish? Now there is a very interesting and important legend in which these truths are symbolically expressed for the Freemasons. That is the temple legend. And the reason for it is as follows. The Bible itself, the Old Testament, derives from the female, the intuitive wisdom, and bears its stamp. The Old Testament is female wisdom. Male wisdom was not able to attain to intuition. It confined itself to building and work. It took stones and constructed buildings. It took metals and made implements. The temple legend puts it thus. One of the Elohim impregnated Eve, and Cain was born. Afterward, another of the Elohim, Jehovah, also known as Adonai, created Adam. And Adam begat Abel by Eve. This legend counterposed the wisdom of Cain and the biblical wisdom, so that by the beginning of the fourth post-Atlantean epoch we have two opposing currents, the Bible representing womanly wisdom and the temple wisdom as its opposing male counterpart. Already in pre-Christian times, what the man, (brackets male wisdom question mark) wanted, stood in opposition to the female wisdom. Moreover, Cain slew his brother Abel. That too comes into the temple legend. Jehovah caused strife between the race of Cain and the race of Abel, and Cain killed Abel. That means nothing else. Readers aside, some very obscure sentences follow here in the German transcript that are not written down. End of readers aside. What was the consequence of the appearance of this Cain wisdom? The outcome of it all was that the fruitfulness that was propagated through its own wisdom was killed. By killing Abel, the male knowledge in Cain killed the possibility of self-propagation that had been brought into being by the gods. That means it is because knowledge had been transferred to the man that the Abel in man has been killed. That is a process in man himself. Through male knowledge, the creative force, the Abel within, has been killed. There now stand in hostile opposition to one another the descendants of Cain and the race of those who were put in the place of Abel, the descendants of Seth. The descendants of Cain are those who use their masculine wisdom to build up the external world. The passive wisdom is applied to external construction. The divine wisdom does not stream down into it. It must build in the world out of what is free. It has no divine intuition. Through trial, through experience, results the harmonizing of the purely mineral products of the earth. Thus Tubal Cain is born out of the race of Cain, and thus later on will Hiram Abiff, or Adon Hiram, be born from the same lineage. I have reserved for myself, reader's aside, it says here, see note, end of reader's aside. Among the Abelites, you find the strongest representative in Solomon. During the third cultural epoch, all the representatives of the Abel line were priests. The ancient priestly wisdom was the intuitive wisdom that formerly worked in woman as the power of fertilization, but was then transformed at a higher level to spiritual wisdom. Out of this priestly wisdom came the Bible. In this way, the Bible came to be a feminine wisdom. This feminine wisdom is able to make great revelations about the divine and to say how this relates to the angels and spirits. The business of the sons of Cain is to shape the earth. Thus the original father of all smiths is indeed Tubal Cain. Therefore Solomon had to send for Hiram Abiff, who could build the temple for him. He built it for King Solomon, the inheritor of the ancient priestly wisdom. For him, for Solomon, who transformed this priestly wisdom into external power. Kingship as an outward institution derives from the rule of the priests. Thus Solomon sent for Hiram Abiff, and thus Solomon's temple was built. But now the Queen of Sheba came to Solomon's court, and a kind of betrothal was celebrated there between the two. Now the temple was shown to the queen, and she desired to be introduced to the builder of this marvelous temple. When she was introduced to Hiram Abiff, something quite special happened in her. A glance from Hiram Abiff fell on her, and that worked in her like fire. And then a second thing happened as follows. She wanted to see the workers and to be shown how all this was accomplished on the physical plane. So Hiram Abiff took the Tau symbol, held it aloft, and the workers all came streaming together like ants. Through this, she was so impressed that she deserted Solomon for Hiram. Some of Hiram's apprentices, whom he had refused to make into masters, came to Solomon's aid. Now they sought to spoil Hiram's masterpiece, the casting of the molten sea. Instead of it coming out as a work of art, streams of fire spurted out in every direction. Hiram Abiff tried to quench it all with water, but all he achieved by this was a complete wreck. A rain of fire sprayed down on everything, including Hiram Abiff. A voice called to him, however, not to be afraid, for out of this would come his greatest success. Then he was led by a figure to the center of the earth. There he met Cain himself, to whom he had been led by Tubal Cain, who founded the art of metalworking. Here an important wisdom was revealed to him. He was told, quote, "Now know the true Jehovah, who is the cause of your being here. Jehovah hates the sons of fire and wants to destroy them. He wants to destroy his own creation. But you need have nothing to fear. To you will be born a son who you will not yourself see, but from whom shall spring a race out of which a new fire worship will develop on the earth." Close quote. With the hammer which Tubal Cain gave him, he was able to complete the projected molten sea, thereby rising still further in the Queen of Sheba's affections. During a walk, a bird appeared in the air, showing her the mystical Tau sign. From this, the queen's nurse realized that the wisdom of the future was hidden under this sign of the Tau. During a feast at which Solomon became intoxicated, the Queen of Sheba took the betrothal ring back from his hand. Hiram Abiff was, however, set upon by the apprentices and killed. He was only just able to write the secret word on a golden triangle and hide it. It was later retrieved and enclosed in a stone shaped in the form of a cube. The Ten Commandments are inscribed on this stone that conceals the hidden word. That is the temple wisdom, which male science has counterposed to the female wisdom. These are things that need only to be clarified, to be examined as to their occult meaning, for their deep significance to be recognized. Consider that Hiram Abiff was brought before the original father of his race. He was told that Jehovah was the enemy of the sons of fire. Who are the sons of fire? They are those who could only come into existence after the separation of the sexes, through the penetration of a physical female by a physical male. Fire is the active principle in the male semen. In male semen lives fire in the occult sense. Jehovah had to create this basic force so that the race could propagate itself. Jehovah created the sons of fire, which was only possible on the basis of this occult fire. Hence he is the opponent of change. He it was who continued the old kind of propagation. For it was an expedient which had been created, and therefore he turned again to the priests and made them into his prophets. He caused the power and the glory of his own wisdom to be proclaimed through the priestly wisdom. Through the priestly wisdom, Jehovah's wisdom came to be made known. Hiram Abiff is thus appointed to undertake the creation of the molten sea, which means the transformation of the mineral kingdom through art. He was also told that a son would be born to him who, even though he would not himself be able to see him, would bring forth a new race. This son is nothing else than the new race which will one day take the place of the old, the present one. The new race for whom it will no longer be necessary for two sexes to unite with one another, but will again be able to bring about propagation through the one human individual. This refers to a far distant future. The old female culture will be relieved by a male culture. The female as a physical form will die out. The male must then have the power in itself to produce another individual out of itself. And where is this power located? Male and female used to be in one individual. And when these two separated, an unfolding of today's individuality took place. The upper part of the human being was formed. What today is the upper part was at that time combined with the sexual organs. The sexual organs of today are only half of the then procreative force. The power in the larynx is indeed the other half. Speech is not as yet creative today. It has to be penetrated by the wisdom of Cain first, and then it must produce. When man has attained the power for his larynx so to develop that his word will be creative, so that he will produce his own kind through the word, then the whole of the productive force will be transferred to the male. Then the work of creation, which was once done by the gods, will be given over to man. When did the word come to be lost? When the system of two sexes originated, it was buried, hidden. The sons of Cain had it only through the original father of their race. Hiram Abiff should at least have the prophecy about it. However, he was killed immediately afterward. The word lies buried, but it is still there. If it were not buried, man would be self-creative, just as the Elohim are self-creative. Therefore, the, in quotes, word of present-day Freemasonry is not the true word, but the false one. The true word is concealed. The Ten Commandments are inscribed on the stone which contains the hidden word. What are the Ten Commandments? They are the laws of the moral world order. They maintain the outer intercourse of man as it now is, subject to the influence of a race having two sexes. Such laws will not be needed when there are no longer two sexes. They are that human code which originated out of the context of two sexes. Thus we have, preserved in Freemasonry, the remembrance of the lost word, which those who work in Freemasonry must strive for, and which can only be gained when the passive male wisdom awakens activity in itself. The Freemasons therefore say, everything which does not stem from one's personal knowledge about the world must be a remnant of the female priestly rule of ancient times. Rather than contenting ourselves with merely inheriting this, conquering it, in question mark in brackets, we actually want to start on a new spiral of existence, we ourselves must bring intuition to the male wisdom of Cain. That would be impossible if one took the female into the secret, which would take man's power from him. It would all be useless the instant it was discussed in front of women. It thus became necessary for the whole female sex to be excluded from Freemasonry. This hangs together with the link between the organ of speech and gender or sexuality. Therefore, the man's voice changes when he reaches puberty. The change of voice is nothing else than the expression of the former connection between the organs of speech and of sexuality. Now you too can grasp what the Freemason is saying. It is only the man who is appointed to enter the lost word at all and to reestablish it. Only the male form of the larynx is in a position to say, to know, what can be regained through the lost word. When we grasp it in this way, one will understand why woman was not permitted to let what was new pass her lips. It is comic to see scholars give as the reason for this that women were not admitted because they blabbered out everything. The female larynx has remained as a rudiment. It is the male larynx which will, however, form the organ of the future. You see, the deep and meaningful relationships are involved, and that the expression Mason has to be taken as literally as possible. That is why the Masons of Greek and Roman times were the builders of things made to express beauty. Cathedrals, temples, and other significant buildings were built by these master builders. The matter rests thus, that a part of what came to be accomplished by the order of Freemasons had naturally to be taken over again from the old priestly wisdom. So once again we have an intermingling of womanly wisdom and male striving. In essence, the secret of Freemasonry is something which has not yet been revealed, which is not even there yet, so that it cannot be revealed, precisely because it does not yet exist. It is something which will be uttered when the word is once more imbued with productive force. Those are a few words which will clarify the thinking of Freemasonry for the occultist. Up to the 18th century it was known that things were so. Only when the connection with higher worlds was lost did the consciousness of what was lost fade from Freemasonry too. And yet again, not so. Freemasonry was watered down. It was said that people no longer knew its meaning. One must be clear, however, that everything which existed as symbols was derived from the old priestly wisdom, and that what is implanted therein in the symbols must still first come into the open. The true female wisdom is gradually becoming quite lost. Because of that, the so-called higher degrees of Freemasonry, which preserved the female wisdom, have been allowed to vanish. All that is still left is what is called craft masonry, which only concerns itself with worldly things, and only understands a little about them, in any case. But that is, after all, quite natural. As materialism developed, then the priestly wisdom did indeed have to fade away. What can happen now? The old wisdom has gone away. We have to live in the externalities. What follows from that? This, that something better can come along again only when a wisdom arrives which is again asexual, which is connected neither with the male nor with the female wisdom, neither with the female Bible nor with the male temple legend. We find this wisdom in theosophy. In this wisdom both sexes understand each other. In it the man that is in woman is at work on woman, and what is once more asexual is working on man. Male and female meet each other there in the knowledge of higher planes. It is therefore quite natural that the proper occult basis has come about in Freemasonry, and that a new start has been made. Something such as this is called a vortex, and there's a picture. In our time, these things are thus intertwining in their influence. We must therefore think of them as interacting. Thus, theosophy has relied neither on the biblical legend nor on the temple legend, but asexually seeks the kernel of wisdom that has to be restored again in everything. Now you see how theosophy is the bringer of peace, the harmonizer. How does this work together in our root race? Our root race recapitulates what already was there before. It brings the antithesis of what was already there in Lemurian times to meaningful expression in the spiritual realm. An opposition had therefore to come about, because the female sex was there originally and follows a falling curve, whereas the male sex is in a rising curve and is seeking in itself the procreative force which the female already has. When we remain in lower spheres, we have to make an exact distinction through occultism. Whoever is racially an Atlantean man need not also be Atlantean in his soul qualities. Hence the soul is not tied to a particular sex either. The souls of female gender work through this until they can live equally with men in the bodies the latter have made for themselves, and there will then be one sex on earth. As long as men still stood in opposition to the female, they had to hold their tongues. The founding of the adoption lodges in the 18th century paved the way for the sexes to come together. The first of these was founded in 1775. A Freemasonry was practiced in them that had different symbols from the male Freemasonry. However, the induction of women in such adoption lodges of the male Freemasons did pave the way for the sexes to come together. The founder of our society was indeed a female member of such an adoption lodge. What must be pointed to as the beginning of Theosophy did indeed thus play a part in the matter. So, Theosophy is a world task, connected with occult currents, and must take over where Freemasonry left off. Freemasonry could indeed still be reawakened and could help us. But the more profound thought is this: these one-sided male endeavors must be vanquished in theosophical circles. Throughout the Middle Ages, there was a sublime preparation for spiritually engendering the opposite sex in man. Man developed in himself by concentrating, at first as a thought, what had to become a reality in him later on. Therefore, as a preparation for this, the cult of Mary resulted during the Middle Ages. This is nothing else than concentrating to engender the female in the male, while for the female, the cult of Jesus served the parallel purpose. The cult of Mary had its origin in this foundation. You will now see what confusion must result when an order arose which broke with all this and sought to regain the female wisdom. It is world dominion which is at stake in this. If anyone wants to leave the old wisdom as it is, he will have to conquer the world for the old powers. There is such an order. It is the Jesuit order. It has consciously set itself this task. That is why the Jesuits and the Freemasons confront each other so sourly. The end of Lecture 17.